and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the difficulty President Trump is having getting competent lawyers to represent him as he finds himself following the resignation of John Dowd and the unhiring of Joseph DeGeneva, represented by only one personal lawyer, Jay Sekulow, a religious right commentator who has crusaded for evangelical causes and so-called religious freedom. Lisa Kern Griffin, a professor of law at Duke University who clerked for Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor and spent 5 years as a federal prosecutor in the Chicago United States Attorney's Office, joins us to discuss how Trump's legal team is getting weaker while it appears that the case Robert Mueller is building against the president is getting stronger, not to mention how Trump's private lawyer Michael Cohen is being crushed by Stormy Daniels' lawyer. We will assess the status of the Mueller inquiry and whether the findings will ever see the light of day, as well as what might result from a high-profile indictment of, say, Jared Kushner. Would that be sufficiently damaging to Trump to either provoke him to move against Mueller or be sufficient to cause the Republicans to distance themselves from Trump ahead of the November elections? Then, with an Uber hawk who wants to bomb Iran about to become Trump's national security advisor, we will examine what a war against Iran would look like with a longtime scholar of Iran, William Beeman, chair of the Department of Anthropology at the University of Minnesota and president of the Middle East section of the American Anthropological Association. He served as a consultant to the State Department, the Defense Department, the UN, and the Congress, and is the author of The Great Satan versus the Mad Mullahs, How the United States and Iran Demonize Each Other, and joins us to discuss how Trump will tear up the treaty with Iran while Bolton will push for America to fight a war against Iran at the behest of Israel's Netanyahu and Saudi Arabia's Mohammed bin Salman. Then finally, following last night's 60 Minutes interview with Stormy Daniels and the recent apology to Melania Trump on CNN by a Playboy model who had an affair with Trump, we will speak with Kate Anderson Brower, a CNN contributor and the author of The Residence, Inside the Private World of the White House, and First Women, The Grace and Power of America's Modern First Ladies. We will discuss her latest article at CNN, What Melania Now Has in Common with Hillary, and whether the current First Lady will continue the tradition of presidential spouses standing by their man. And joining us now is Lisa Kern Griffin, a professor of law at Duke University, who focuses on evidence theory, constitutional criminal procedure, and federal criminal justice policy. Previously, she clerked for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor of the Supreme Court of the United States, and she also spent 5 years as a federal prosecutor in the Chicago United States Attorney's Office. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lisa Kern Griffin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us, Lisa. And let's just touch on Trump's legal team. It seems now he's down to only one personal lawyer, Jay Sekulow. His lawyer quit the other day. Then he tried to hire DeGeneva, a U.S. attorney, a former U.S. attorney with somewhat controversial views, shall we say. And I don't know what happened there with him and his wife, but he's back down from that. So there seems to be a certain amount of disarray, even though Ty Cobb, who's representing the White House, seems to be still pretty consistent. But Dowd apparently quit over Trump's apparently insistence that he can handle Mueller when most of his legal advisors don't think that's a good idea. So at this point, what's your take on what seems to be, by the way, it also seems to be reflected in the other case of the Stormy Daniels case, where it looks like Trump's private lawyer, Cohen, is being out-lawyered, if you will, by Stormy Daniels' lawyer. So does he have a legal deficiency, shall we say?
Oh, I think he does. I think it's a quite extraordinary situation where the President of the United States is all but representing himself in what may be the most significant criminal investigation in recent history.
And is this because of his personality, his mercurial personality? What's your understanding? Or is he just a cheapskate? Or is it the other possibility that the big white shoe law firms have no one having to do with him?
Well, there are a number of reasons why the usual suspects would not want to get involved in this case. I think that the president is a notoriously difficult and stubborn client, and that doesn't always augur well for the outcome of a case. there are some ethical constraints on what the best lawyers would want to get involved with in terms of what they might be asked to do or be put in a position of having to do. There are some conflicts issues given how many tentacles this investigation has and how many other people have Washington representation in the case. And early on, there were some suggestions that some of it was financial as well. I think at this point, the biggest difficulty is the cast of characters that surrounds the president and the very difficult nature of his personality and how hard it is to represent him.
Well, of course, the political opposition in this country, many, I think, are expecting a blue wave, and they're also invested in impeachment. There are a bunch of ads being put out by a California billionaire to that effect. And it seems to me that there's an element of wishful thinking here, and that at the end of the day, people, I don't think, are clear about what the Mueller mandate is, that somehow, perhaps because of Ken Starr, they think that there's a special counsel statute still operating, when my understanding is at the end of the day, we may not even see a Mueller report. There's no obligation to make it public, from what I understand.
So Mr. Mueller is operating under the special counsel regulations, but he is not operating under the independent counsel statute that governed at the time of, for example, the Ken Starr investigation into President Clinton's conduct. So it is a different situation. Ken Starr was operating independently. He took full advantage of his ability to release a report to the public. It was a salacious bestseller of a report that dropped like an album at the end of his investigation. And that is not the situation that Mr. Mueller is in. He has supervisors within the Department of Justice because he is operating under a different law and under a set of regulations known as the special counsel regulations. And he, at the moment, reports to Rod Rosenstein, who is the deputy attorney general. So whatever happens to the report in the Mueller investigation is going to be largely up to the discretion of the deputy attorney general.
So what should the public expect here, particularly those, as I mentioned, that might have an investment in impeachment or some kind of removal, because clearly Donald Trump is not our most popular president?
Well, 2 points about that. I think that it's important to understand that impeachment is basically the functional equivalent of an indictment. It's only an opening bid. In order for the president to actually be removed, he has to be convicted by the Senate. And that is not going to happen. Even if there is a blue wave of sorts in the 2018 midterms, that's at this point much more likely to affect the House than the Senate. And even if it were to affect the Senate, it would be by the slimmest of margins and not a big enough one to ensure the president's conviction in the Senate. So while I do think there is a chance of him being impeached in the sense that the House would pass articles of impeachment, I think there is no chance at all of the president being removed because he is convicted by the Senate, unless, of course, very serious underlying criminality is revealed somehow through the Mueller investigation. If and when the president leaves the White House before 2020, I think it's likely to be because his back is against the wall and he resigns in exchange for some favorable treatment, like a pardon, in much the same way that Richard Nixon did. On your question about the report, I understand that it is frustrating to imagine Mueller having completed this investigation and then not releasing something that is available to the public or even maybe to Congress itself. But it is functionally up to Rod Rosenstein, although there are a variety of ways that this could play out. He will submit his full report to the Justice Department. That report will include material that must remain secret. Some of it will be classified. Some of it will be grand jury material that it can't be revealed under the regulations that govern the grand jury. He could also give the Justice Department a second version of the report that does not include material that has to be kept secret, and that might be released to Congress, and it might even be released to the public, depending on what Rod Rosenstein decides to do and what the pressures on him are at that particular point in time. Even if the report never sees the light of day, though, we're starting to see just the tip of the iceberg, the beginning of what the Mueller investigation has uncovered in the indictments, in the court documents themselves. And I believe there will be additional indictments, and I believe that with each indictment, a fuller version of the story will come out. So through these speaking indictments, at least some of what the investigation has revealed will eventually become known to the public.
And again, I'm speaking with Lisa Kern Griffin, a professor of law at Duke University, who focuses on evidence theory, constitutional criminal procedure, and federal criminal justice policy. Previously, she clerked for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor of the Supreme Court of the United States and also spent 5 years as a federal prosecutor in the Chicago United States Attorney's Office. So that, I guess, is where I think, well, first of all, it's apparent that something is really bothering President Trump. And I get a lot of solicitations from conservative groups and think tanks, etc. And there's a drumbeat to fire Mueller, as earlier there was a drumbeat to release the Nunes memo. And it feels like this is a kind of orchestrated campaign. And certainly for the first time ever, Trump has been tweeting out direct attacks on Robert Mueller, which hadn't happened previously. So my sense is that, well, let me ask you, what's your hunch about what it is that Trump is so afraid of?
I imagine that there is underlying wrongdoing, and both involving the campaign and, of course, involving his financial dealings with the Russians and others going back 2 years before the campaign. So there's no doubt that he fears revelations that will be very damaging to him. Whether or not those will come out, of course, remains to be seen. But as many people have noted, his behavior is not the behavior of someone who has nothing to conceal and no fear of the investigation. I don't think that necessarily means that the best strategic move for him is to try to precipitate the termination of Robert Mueller. He would have to fire not only Robert Mueller, but pretty much everyone involved in the investigation. He would have to persuade the Department of Justice to dismiss the pending suits. There are already quite a few people who have been indicted, have pled guilty, are awaiting sentencing. So it is hard to call something fake news when it is happening in real courts. And he would have to do away not only with the people involved, but also with the cases that are pending. It's not inconceivable to me that he would do that, but it would take a series of very aggressive moves for him to make this entire investigation go away, including probably issuing some pardons. And at that point, I think we will be witnessing a president who has reverted to a complete scorched earth strategy in dealing with the pressures on him. I don't think we're at that point yet. I think the president acts at all times and in every way in his own self-interest, and he will probably play out this string until he imagines that the peril he will be in by trying to do away with the Mueller investigation is less than the peril that he is in by letting it continue. At the moment, I think he probably still has at least some vague hope that the investigation will conclude without serious wrongdoing about him being revealed. And as long as he has that hope, I imagine that he'll forego firing the special counsel only because it will be so politically perilous for him to do so.
Well, Politico is reporting that the Trump people are very concerned about Rick Gates telling all to Mueller. As you know, he has is cooperating. And he may well be, at least according to the Politico article, more important than even Michael Flynn. And he certainly, in terms of whatever they have on Manafort or whatever case they're building against him, he will obviously have a lot to say about that. But at the heart of Manafort, what seems to be pretty straightforward here, and this, I wonder whether this is what also applies to Trump. Manafort essentially was given $30 million by an oligarch close to Putin who was also close to organized crime. And then he sort of started to call the debt. Apparently, Manafort just squandered the money. We don't know what he did with it, but the money disappeared. And then Manafort got the job as campaign director without a payment. Then he was able to get Deripaska off his back by saying, you know, we'll give you private briefings. And we know that the Republican platform was changed to make it more Russia-friendly. So Deripaska completely switched his tune as long as Manafort was in there. And the minute that Manafort got fired, then Deripaska sues him for recovering, I think, $20 million of the missing $30 million. Could that same pattern be also applied to Donald Trump in terms of raising money from dubious Russians who you just simply don't want them to be your creditors?
I think that the various Russians, including potentially even the Russian government itself, probably have compromising information and some financial leverage that is meaningful to the president. He, of course, himself, though, is in a very powerful position and can, in some respects, counteract that leverage. Of course, Paul Manafort wanted to monetize his involvement in the campaign and wasn't really able to do so and is now in a very vulnerable position. And so there's some question whether the special counsel indictment or his situation with respect to his Russian creditors is more serious. But he's in a very different position than the president. I don't know that the president is going to be put in such a vulnerable position in the short term. In the long term, who knows? This story is it gets stranger every day, and I have no prediction about the president's status with respect to his Russian creditors when and if his presidency comes to a precipitous end.
So back to your analysis, Lisa Kern Griffin, of how we're learning about what Mueller might be up to, because the report may not come out, or who knows when it will come out. But in the meantime, we get a glimpse into what he's working on from the indictments, and they do seem to be fairly well written, to say the least. So is that to say then that those, particularly on the Democratic side, that are depending upon Mueller or impeachment or whatever, what's going to happen before the election? I mean, in other words, since the report's not likely to be out possibly for a year or so, from what I understand, maybe you have better information than me, but the long and the short of it is that I think that what it would take, I think, would be something like an indictment of Jared Kushner to really get the attention of President Trump and of the Republicans who seem to be backing him or enabling him.
Well, first of all, I don't think anyone's information about this is better than anyone else's. One of the things that has been so admirable about the special counsel's investigation is that it is very buttoned down and leak-free, and it is an extremely professional operation, and we are all speculating based on what we learn from what they do in court, which is the only place where they've done their talking. They don't speak to the press. They do their speaking through court documents and court appearances. So we're all speculating based on what we see in court and what we've observed in similar investigations over time. But it is always just a prediction until they actually act, and they've done a masterful job of holding their cards very close to the vest. I think that because the special counsel is such a consummate professional and such a long-time DOJ professional, that he will likely follow the Justice Department's guidelines on whether or not to take dramatic action in an investigation in a time period that is very close to an election. The letter issued by Director Comey notwithstanding, it has always been Justice Department policy to try to keep those things separate. And I would be very surprised if the special counsel were issuing indictments right up until the election or in the months right before the election. So if there are further steps to be taken in the near term in the investigation, I suspect that they will be late spring, early summer, and that there may be a lull after that in order to allow the electoral process to play out. That is, of course, assuming that there isn't some criminality that is very important to reveal at a particular point in time or some climax in the investigation that just can't be avoided. Sometimes that happens. But generally speaking, I think he will lay low during the actual sort of late summer, early fall electoral period. I don't know when the report will come out, and we may not know that it has come out because, of course, it will go, as I said, first to the Justice Department and, at the moment, to the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein.
It does seem, though, that Donald Trump is using the playbook from his mentor, Roy Cohn, in terms of going after your accuser in a slash-and-burn, take-no-prisoners way. But the collateral damage so far seems to be the Justice Department itself and the FBI. And since you were a federal prosecutor, Lisa Kern Griffin, what's your understanding of what's happening to the morale within both those organizations? The Attorney General himself has not come to the support of his rank and file. He obviously hung Andrew McCabe out to dry, if not directly fired him on Trump's orders. Do you have any inkling of how the morale is inside the DOJ and the FBI?
I don't, because I'm not within those organizations at the moment. I can imagine that it's regarded as very damaging to have the chief executive critiquing the investigative agents These are elite organizations. They are staffed by consummate professionals. They, generally speaking, operate entirely separate from partisan influence. To the extent that FBI agents have any identifiable political leanings, they are notably to the right. And that's entirely beside the point, though, and doesn't affect the way in which they go about enforcing the laws of this country. So I think to suggest otherwise is very damaging, undermines the entire rule of law. And I think that it will have lasting repercussions. I think there will be a long, hopefully successful repair period after this presidency is over. And I think that at this point, the professionals in those departments are probably very much looking forward to that.
But just in closing, so far, Donald Trump has definitely attacked his accusers, and he's been successful, has he not, firing Comey, McCabe, and others within the DOJ who have been marginalized or sent to Siberia or essentially, you know, attacked.
Yes, he has so far gotten away with it. He seems to be able to act with impunity. The Republican leadership in Congress has done nothing to check his abuses of power, and it's unclear whether they will at any point. So he certainly keeps testing the waters, and that has led some people to speculate that he's gearing up to terminate the special counsel. I think he's focused, frankly, far more on discrediting the special counsel rather than go to the trouble of firing him. I think he's trying to ensure that whatever findings he eventually releases are irrelevant to the 40% base on which the president relies, and maybe even to the Republican leadership in Congress.
Well, Lisa Kern Griffin, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And again, I've been speaking with Lisa Kern Griffin, who's a professor of law at Duke University, who focuses on evidence theory, constitutional criminal procedure, and federal criminal justice policy. Previously, she clerked for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor of the United States Supreme Court and also spent 5 years as a federal prosecutor in the Chicago United States Attorney's Office. We're going to take a brief station break and look into what a war with Iran would look like now that we have an Uber hawk who wants to bomb Iran about to become Trump's national security advisor.